Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. In case you're not aware of it, Thursday in the Doghouse is a weekly program devoted to the subject of our pet dogs and educating the dog-owning community. We've had many programs when we've talked about normal and problematic dog behaviors, canine health issues, and we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the needs of puppies. We even had an animal communicator on last week who worked on the phone with a caller's 3-year-old cockapoo named Popcorn, who lives in Williamstown, New Jersey. Very interesting. My guest today is Pennsylvania behaviorist Susan Belanda. Sue is a regular visitor to the Doghouse. She's an ethologist specializing in canine and feline behavior, and she's been training dogs since 1961. Sue earned her bachelor's degree from William Patterson University and her master's degree from Monmouth University. She's written 6 books, numerous articles, and she's been published in Proceedings of the Journal of the National Association of Search and Rescue. Our topic of discussion today will focus on barking dogs. We'll talk to Sue in just a minute. Please let me tell you about the services I offer in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Sue. As always, thank you very much for returning to the Doghouse.
I always enjoy it.
I enjoy having you here, too. Our subject for today is dogs that bark. And so, have you ever met a dog that didn't bark?
Nope.
Me neither. So when they're barking, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to tell us something? Or are they trying to communicate to other dogs this way? What's the deal with the barking?
Well, it's all of those. I mean, they bark to express emotion. The thing about barking that we don't know are all the sounds they make that we may not be able to hear.
Okay.
Don't forget, dogs have much better hearing than we do, so if they make noises even other than barking, like a huff of a breath or, you know, that kind of stuff, another dog is going to hear that where we wouldn't, and it could also be, you know, in the group of vocalization.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you can't ever train a dog, or I don't think it's right to even expect a dog not to bark at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they need to. It would be like telling a human don't talk.
Right.
And, you know, how anybody that's ever been around children or raised children, or remember being a child, can relate to be quiet for 30 minutes kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk now. I mean, how difficult that is to do.
Mm-hmm.
When you have this need to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, therefore, when I work with dogs that bark excessively, I try to teach them to tone it down, not to stop it altogether, because I've never, ever successfully stopped it altogether.
Right. And really, would we want to? I mean, you know, I mean, we're taking their language away. Some people, you know, I mean, this is a horrible thing, but I know in some states, possibly, you know, I don't know how many, but some people have surgical removal of the dog's vocal cords, which I think is totally inhumane.
Well, I agree, but I do believe, I'm not 100% certain, but I do believe that they can still make noises.
Right, they do. I mean, it sounds like a scratchy, they're blowing air through their throat, but it's still a noise, you know?
Right, and, right.
So you're not going to stop the barking by doing anything horrendous like that.
Right, right. And again, I mean, we don't know the psychological effects that doing something like that would have on a dog.
Right, right. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, my dog barks all the time, but guess what? Last night my dog was barking and I ignored him, and it turned out there was somebody wandering around the back of my house.
Right.
So, and dogs have saved their owners' lives by barking because there was a fire.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And so they scratch on the door and they bark like crazy. And so, you know, I mean, there's a reason for these things. And the dogs are no dummies. They know what they're doing.
Right.
But, you know, I also wanted to tell you, too, and I don't know if you've seen it, but there was a study done on, and I think I saw videos on YouTube, where they were asking people to listen to sounds of dogs barking to try and define what it was that the dog might have been trying to express. And a lot of people got it right.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with that study.
Yeah, it was great. And I tried to figure it out myself without hearing what the answer was, you know. And a lot of times you can really kind of figure out what the dog is trying to say.
Well, the interesting thing about that is they did the study with pet owners and non-pet owners.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I didn't realize that. So
I believe so, if I recall correctly. And the people who didn't own a dog were still very accurate in determining the type of bark.
How cool.
And, well, you figure even if you don't own a dog, you haven't lived your life without being exposed to them.
Mm-hmm. True. That's true. They're all over.
Yeah, yeah. So you learn. And the thing is that the bark, I don't think that, you know, again, in my observations, I don't think barking is equivalent to canine words, per se.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is that I never see dogs sitting together or being together and having a barking conversation.
Well, thank goodness for that. It would be a very noisy world.
Right, but you know what I'm saying. And so, therefore, I think a bark is a more of an emotional type of a communication than it is a spoken word type of a communication.
Right. Okay.
I mean, if you stop and think about how complex language is, our spoken words are a multi-level of symbolism for the object that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think dogs do that. I think they can communicate things in other ways, but not that way.
Right.
So I think a bark is more of an emotional type of a response than a spoken word type of thing.
Okay, so in order, if somebody has a dog who barks excessively, in order to remediate that situation, do they need to know exactly why the dog is barking in order to get it under control?
Well, it would help. It would help in the training process if they did know what the trigger mechanism was.
Mm-hmm.
But what I teach my dogs, and people have been amazed, because when I had my practice going before, I had a large area, like it would be a 2.5-car garage that was underneath of my house, and because the house was up on a hill, so you had that access right from the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have up to 5 dogs of my own, and not one of my dogs would ever bark as these people would walk up my long 400-foot driveway or drive up the driveway with their dogs who were barking.
Okay.
And come into my home in that room, and my dogs would be sitting on the opposite side of the door to that room and never make a peep.
Really?
And people would be amazed, and I would illustrate it to them by opening the door, and there would be the dog sitting there all listening intent, you know, to everything going on, but would never bark. And then, on the other hand, if it wasn't a training session and somebody came to the front or the back of the house, that was another story. Then all holy bedlam would break loose.
So could it be that your dogs got to repetitively understand that these dogs that are coming up and to go into that room, that was normal, but any other person that would come up to your home and go to a different location, that was not normal. And
that's part of it, but I actually actively taught the dogs not to bark in that circumstance.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, because when I would get a new dog, because the reason I had so many is I had two search and rescue dogs, and as they aged, you have to plan 2 years ahead of time when you think the dog's going to be close to retirement to start training the next one.
Okay.
So I had young dogs and I had old dogs there and retired dogs at some point that, so they were, the new dogs coming in would start to bark.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to learn that under these circumstances they were not to bark.
Okay.
Now the interesting thing, which was kind of threw a little extra wrench in the works, is that I'm hearing impaired, and my dogs learned that if they barked for me to hear them, they had to really bark, or they had to come near me and hit me.
Really?
And so that put another spin on it, too, because the dogs learned if they just did a little woof-woof and they were not next to me, I wouldn't hear them.
Right.
So, and I'm referring more to, like, I have to go out or something's out there kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But what it is, you if you can find what the trigger mechanism is for a dog that barks excessively, you can use that in your training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the purpose that I just explained all of this. Because the trigger mechanism in my case were dogs coming up the driveway, barking dogs, and coming into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And by knowing what it was that would trigger the dogs, I could use that in the training program to teach them that particular thing they should embark at.
So
let's say, for instance, you have a dog who sits on the back of the couch and looks out the picture window, and every time somebody goes by, they bark.
Right.
They go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is a common problem.
Very.
Mm-hmm. And what you do is you set it up. So before you set up the situation, you have to train the dog what the command for not barking is.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot yell. If a person, which most people do, a dog starts to bark and they'll yell, quiet,
mm-hmm.
quiet. Well, if you take away the meaning of the word and listen to the sound only,
right.
it sounds like you're barking with the dog, and that signals to the dog, hey, I'm right, yes, I should do it, they're barking too.
Right.
So the worst thing you could do is yell at your dog to be quiet, whatever word you use.
Mm-hmm.
Because the emotion in it is going to equal the emotion that the dog is expressing in the bark under those circumstances in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you teach the dog the command quiet, or whatever word you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that when they're not trying to bark.
So in other words, you say the word quiet when they're quiet.
Well, you teach them to speak.
You do teach
and
them to speak.
When they speak because you're asking them to speak, they're under control.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when a dog is highly excited and barking at something, he's not in a mental state to learn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you don't train him under those circumstances. You train him when he's under control. So you teach him to speak, and it's hard to explain without showing you, but you sandwich with your finger on the top and the bottom of a little treat, and dog is speaking, you say, quiet, and you put that treat right under their nose instantly.
All right.
Now, if you and your listeners will right now inhale through your nose and try to say hello at the exact same time, you'll find you cannot do it.
No, I can't.
It's physically impossible. Well, is it physically impossible for your dog to sniff and bark at the same time?
Oh,
so when you present that treat under the dog's nose as he's barking, he's going to stop barking and sniff the treat, and you say, good, quiet, and you pop the treat into his mouth.
Mm.
So he learns the word quiet means cease barking. Once he understands that, then you set it up for the trigger at a distance when the dog's not going to be highly excited to to present itself, and as the dog just thinks, the ideal time is when the dog just starts to like,
right,
just thinks about barking. That's when you say quiet, and you give him the treat, and good dog.
Okay.
And you keep doing that until the dog is under control.
Mm-hmm.
And he learns that when he sees a person coming, he's not to bark. And then, of course, you up it by having a person come closer to the picture window or whatever the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
But you can expect the dog to obey the command, even if he knows it, when he's highly excited, without having him have the opportunity to build up to it. Because what you're asking the dog to do, which is true of all obedience training, is you're asking the dog to exercise self-control.
Control. Excellent, right.
And obedience, and this is just no different than an obedience exercise.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Even if the dog knows what the word is,
mm-hmm.
if he's in it, he has to be in a situation and had to have practice exercising self-control in order to gain self-control.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, yes.
And
absolutely.
This is where you have to give the dog time. That's why, yes, your puppy or your dog can learn to sit in the first training session, but can he do it when there are better things to do?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a question of knowing what the word is. It's a question of being able to choose to do what you want rather than he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotions that dogs have when they bark like that in those situations are very high.
Right.
So it's going to take a while for the dog to learn that under these circumstances he's not supposed to bark. And he can learn that.
Okay. That's
whether
right.
he can exercise that self-control under every circumstance, well, that remains to be seen.
Right. And but how much training you're doing.
The dog will bark maybe two or three times instead of 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. True. What about the dog that barks when nobody's home? What about the dog that has separation anxiety? Is there any way that we can do something there other than, you know, I mean, if the dog has that severe of an emotional problem where he barks most of the day and you're not there, is there anything that we can do ahead of time to keep that barking under control?
Well, you're dealing with a different issue now. You're dealing with a symptom. Barking is a symptom of another problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to address the separation anxiety in order to stop the barking, because in this situation, if the anxiety is high enough that the dog is vocalizing when you're not home, then he's not going to be able to exercise self-control after being taught not to bark.
Okay.
So you have to treat the separation anxiety in order to cure the barking. The barking in this case is a symptom of another problem, whereas the barking that a dog does when somebody walks in front of the house is an alarm,
mm-hmm.
warning bark.
Correct.
Which is not a symptom of another problem.
All right.
You see the difference in the two.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why it's important to know, if you can, what the trigger is, because you know what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
The dog that suffers from separation anxiety, who's vocalizing, is probably going to be destructive and have other issues that are associated with separation anxiety.
Right.
And
right.
So in some cases, those dogs may need to be medicated.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Or put in doggy daycare or something, you know.
Right.
Because the separation anxiety is very difficult to treat.
Tell me about it. It is. It's really a very, very difficult emotion to have to deal with, and it's very, of course, obviously difficult for the dog, too.
Right, right.
Very
well,
difficult.
The problem with separation anxiety is you can't stay home to go through its complete treatment process to wean the dog from that.
Right.
Every time you leave, you set the dog back a little bit, because you have to. I mean, people have to go to work. They have to go to the store or whatever.
Right, right.
However, even though we're talking about barking today, I want to mention separation anxiety in many, many cases can be prevented. And I'd say at least in half the cases or more of separation anxiety that I see are induced by the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much easier to prevent it than it is to cure.
Yeah, especially if you have a puppy. You start
yes.
with a puppy, you've got a clean slate, you teach the puppy to be alone for graduating periods of time, and you can avoid that, absolutely.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
And I mean, you have to, and I just can't stress it enough,
mm-hmm.
people that get young dogs or little dogs, especially small dogs, are more prone to it because of the way people handle them and treat them.
Mm-hmm. And the excited greetings and, hi, puppy, 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 every time you come home. And then when you leave, it's, oh, puppy, I'll be back, don't worry, and all of that
That's
stuff.
Part of it, but the other part of it is not treating them like a dog.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
The little ones that they're carried around all the time and hugged and kissed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dogs get addicted to tactile stimulation, and even though they solicit it, sometimes they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of one of the pieces that causes separation anxiety.
Right. So you work a lot with German Shepherds. What about the dog who is a shepherd? He has natural protective instincts where the dog, you know, hears a sound outside and goes into this mad tirade of barking. And so we can, you know, probably do what you suggested. But then, you know, he's barking at other things. He barks when he hears noises that he can't see where it's coming from. He barks for various reasons, and he's really doing his job. We want the dog to let us know if something is out there to alert to. You know, I mean, this is a very common problem. So you just do the same. You can do what you suggested earlier about using the tree and things like that. But most people don't have a whole lot of time to stay with the dog and just continually monitor what the dog is barking at. Is that going to be a problem?
No, because once the dog knows what the quiet command is, you can apply it to different situations. But the what you just described is partly a symptom of lack of socialization.
Okay.
Because if you socialize the protective dog, like the Doberman, the Rottie, the Shepherd, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
If you socialize them and they know what is normal,
mm-hmm.
what is acceptable, then they will only alert to what is abnormal.
Right.
The dog who barks every time the neighbor comes in and slams the door has not been socialized properly.
Okay.
Usually what I've seen with in many cases, and not just those breeds, but with all the larger breeds,
mm-hmm.
is that people often get the dog because they want a dog, but the other thing in the back of their mind is they want a dog for protection.
Mm-hmm.
So they isolate the dog from what they think are the situations they want to be protected from. But
mm-hmm.
that's the worst thing to do, because the most socialized dog, the dog who is raised to be the friendliest to everybody,
right.
people coming to the door, people coming into the house, actually makes the best protector.
Because they know what's normal and what's not normal.
Exactly right. They are the safest dog to have. And that dog will protect if somebody comes in that's not acceptable. And again, I'll use my own dog. I had a Bolzer on, and you can't get a more protective, hard breed than that.
Mm.
If you came into my house, you could come into my house, and if I was home and it was daylight, he would let you in. Don't try to pick anything up and leave with it. Okay?
Right.
That's another story.
Right.
But he would let you in. He wouldn't pitch a fit. But if I was in bed or if it was nighttime,
mm.
that was another story.
Mm-hmm.
He would not let you in, because I had people coming in for counseling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned, and partly because I taught him, that this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, you don't put a hand on me or threaten me in any way, because he would know.
Yeah.
And you know, he would not hesitate to attack.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't trained for that. It's just natural for that breed.
Right.
But the point is that by knowing what was acceptable, he was the safest dog. He was a search and rescue dog. He was a therapy dog.
Wow.
I have pictures of him with kids surrounding him at camps where he was. Kids were 3 or 4 deep
mm-hmm.
surrounding this dog with all their hands out to pet him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's loving every minute of it. He was the safest animal you could want.
Now, did you raise him from a puppy? Or did you rescue him?
I got him at 13 weeks.
Right. So if somebody got a breed like that, although I have never seen any dog like that at a shelter, but I'm sure that some of these types of dogs do wind up in shelters, So you rescue the dog, and the dog could be a year or two or even older and is very set in its patterns. Isn't that a huge challenge when that dog finds, even a shepherd, to come into the home, and after he adjusts and acclimates to his new environment, becomes more protective and really a little bit more neurotic because he's already lost a home or two, and then could have an increase in the barking because he thinks he needs to go into high protection mode. Isn't that more challenging?
Well, it just takes a little longer, but, you know, dogs are not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They remember the past. They're aware of the present. They can project to the future. And if you spend the time and educate the dog, and the key is show the dog.
Right.
If you show the dog, eventually, unless they're so ingrained with something, usually from a traumatic experience,
mm-hmm.
if you show the dog the proper way to behave and let them learn situations, many dogs will adapt.
Okay.
And they will come around. But it takes, the older the dog is and the more severe the situation he came from is,
mm-hmm.
the longer it's going to take.
Do dogs ever bark just because they're having a good time? Are they barking for fun?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know some people who like to hear themselves talk, and I've met some dogs like that.
Yeah, so that would really be hard to, I mean, there's a self-reinforcing behavior every time it happens if they're just doing it to hear their own voice.
Well, that's a big assumption. And again, I would, and I'm kind of joking with you a little, but I think, again, you have to look for a trigger. Dogs will bark out of boredom.
Right.
And people will think that they're barking because they want to hear themselves bark, because they just stand there barking.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell by their body language that they're not barking at anything in particular.
Okay, they're just barking.
They're just barking. And usually that is a boredom.
Mm-hmm.
Or I kind of equate it to a 4 or 5-year-old child who has the persistence that adults have lost a long time ago.
Oh.
And if the dog has been reinforced for barking, like when they first started to bark, if the people ran out and, oh, you're a good boy, and what's the matter, and he got attention, and he's bored, and he
mm-hmm.
finds that barking brings people out, well, sometimes that barking is persistence to get attention, but it still goes back to boredom.
Right.
And the thing about that is the dog should not be tied outside. They should not be left outside.
Mm-hmm.
In kennels.
On chains.
I'm not saying you can't put them out when you're out with them.
Right.
But they shouldn't be left out there to their own devices.
Absolutely. I mean,
these are the dogs that are going to be boredom, and want to, and maybe start barking.
Right.
And sometimes it can be a negative reinforcement. It could be you're gone at work, you leave the dog out in the kennel, and the neighbor throws something at the kennel to shut the dog up.
Right.
And the dog's still getting attention. It's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Sue, this has been great, and I hope that a lot of people have heard you, because there are a lot of dogs out there that are barking, and nobody's really giving them the time and paying the attention to them that they need. One of the things I'd love to talk to you in a future program is about canine fear periods. Can we talk about that next time?
Sure, sure.
That would be a great topic, because I don't think too many people are aware of those periods occurring in a dog's life.
Right, the fright stage.
The fright stages, exactly. So thank you very much once again for doing a wonderful job here at Thursday in the Doghouse, and we'll make sure to set something up very, very soon for you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Sue.
Bye-bye.
Duke, do you have a barking problem? Calm down. Listen, I want to remind everybody that if you've missed any previous shows or you weren't able to catch an entire program during a week, you can always listen to my podcasts at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Click on the page marked Renee's Radio Show, and you can hear any show that interests you. The topics are right there. Next week, we'll be talking to a California trainer, and we're going to talk about common behavior problems that some dogs might exhibit after they've been adopted from a shelter. So I hope you tune in. If you have a rescue dog, next week's show is going to be a very important one to listen to, and I hope you'll join us then. So as soon as the sun comes out, go out, take your dogs for a walk, and I hope you all have a great week. We'll see you next Thursday at 10 o'clock right here, listening to Thursday in the Doghouse. Talk to you later.